is KAZU, Pacific Grove, Radio with a Choice. My name is Mae Brussel. The title of my broadcast is World Watchers. It is program number 817, August the 3rd, 1987. Before I begin the broadcast, I want to say the views expressed on this show are those of myself and do not necessarily reflect the views of KAZU's staff or board of directors. Also, the following hour of World Watchers is made possible in part by Lowdown, a leading manufacturer of microcomputer peripherals located in Scotts Valley. For more information, call 438-7400. And now I shall begin with World Watchers. I made a decision today that I've been thinking about for a while the Iran-Contra Gate story was unfolding, and that was that I would stop World Watchers with the format that I've had for 16 and a half years, and decided that I would spend more time writing and organizing my accumulated research and getting out in a publication the material that I've already written is one composite instead of separate articles. I'm going to continue on KAZU. I like the contact, and I appreciate your call-in participation, and I will share with you for 2 hours instead of 1 hour the news of the week, take the most important stories, bring up some of the material that I think is pertinent, and then share with you, and you will be part of the program, and we'll share 2 hours instead of one. But the cassettes that go out from World Watchers by subscription to other radio stations and private subscribers around the country, I decided to discontinue or stop that. As I said, it's been 16 and a half years, and I want to move on and do some other things. And I realized that after the Iran-Contra affair with the parade of characters, those 30 witnesses that came across the screen, that it was time to study the relationship of them to each other and to the past events I've spoken about, and chart and diagram the historical context in which I place these people. There will be a lot of books coming out, some more congressional hearings and so forth. So starting October the 5th, I will do the formal part of World Watchers through August and September. Then starting October the 5th, we will go to 2 hours a week for this community, and I will not make those available in other cities or to other people. I'm just too inundated with mail and telephone calls and requests for tapes or sheets or broadcasts from around the country and from Canada that I just don't have time to even answer the mail or think about it. And therefore, I believe it's time to just slow down a little bit, and we'll do the talk show and leave the other part to history. And the past broadcasts are available. They're numbered and dated if people want that material. For those of you who followed the news last week, there was Chief of Staff Donald Reagan in the hot seat with no hot questions, oozing out his charm. He was so disliked when he was in the White House in Washington. And there was the Mr. Lovable Donald Reagan just smiling and very happy to be there. And in the course of questioning him about the White House, Senator Paul Sarbanes, a Democrat of Maryland, made a very startling conclusion. It was dramatic. He said there was a junta in the White House, in the National Security Council, that was commandeered by the Foreign Policy Initiative. They took it over and relegated the highest officials in the country to ignorance, if you believe they were in ignorance. He said you had Poindexter and North and their associates, in effect, invoking the authority of the President of the United States, freezing out the Chief of Staff, the Secretary of Defense, the Secretary of State, and pursuing their own policies which the President of the United States said, if I had known, I would have strongly opposed. And it was a very dramatic moment where they talked about a vice admiral and a lieutenant colonel who decided they were the sole repository of wisdom, truth, and patriotism, according to Chairman Daniel Inouye. And they should keep. They kept the information from the President, the Secretary of Defense, the Secretary of State, the Joint Chief of Staff, and the Congress. And Senator Inouye joined Senator Sarbanes by saying, you had a mini junta there. And this was a shock to hear the word junta in the White House, even a mini junta. But remember that all of these people are lying through their teeth. Nothing like this happened without their knowing it. And there weren't a handful of people that knew about it. There was participation of the Defense Department, the State Department, the CIA, the National Security Council. They were all in it, and the Contras and the worldwide network of banking connections in the Panama, Cayman Islands, in Florida, out of Switzerland, and so forth. There's a quotation in People's Daily World about the secret hunt inside the White House, and with great glee that this horrible thing had been exposed, they thought that this was a miracle to talk about the chief of state and his fellow cohorts being frozen out. But that isn't the way it happened. The Washington Post this morning and San Francisco Chronicle had a story about Donald Reagan, the same character who let them know about this terrible junta, and he said that at first his plan was to blame the National Security Council. Now, remember the William Casey Oliver North Poindexter script. Casey said to North, "You can be the fall guy." North says, "I'll take the spear. I'll be the fall guy." And then Casey says, "But you're not high enough. It'll be Poindexter." "Oh, yeah, that's Poindexter and North, sure." And several, about 6 or 10 cohorts that have been murdered or passed away untimely, or as they said at the hearings, conveniently, in the last few months. But the Washington Post had a story about Donald Reagan, and he said the night before the announcement of that diversion memo that was located by the Justice Department, he thought that they should plan to blame just the National Security Council as a chief of staff. And he said Reagan's plan of action that he drew up November the 24th envisioned laying the blame on the national security. Well, that's what William Casey was saying. That's what Oliver North testified about. He would say that Poindexter was part of this scheme of covering up, and that he was involved with the activities that brought the president to this point of embarrassment. But then Don Reagan went on to say, "I was very confused. I was going to use this as our cover line, but the president's comments about the meeting with the congressional leaders and on the air, television, and so forth, said he was sympathetic towards North and Poindexter, and those were the two people that Don Reagan wanted to put the blame on for everything that happened. To hear the speech, the speeches this morning, at the finale of the hearings, it again narrowed down to these two, and Don Reagan couldn't figure out why the president defended the NSC, because it was supposed to be the fall guy. Well, that's not inconsistent. Blame Oliver North and John Poindexter. They have pretty broad shoulders, and they'll be millionaires, while the other guy said, "I don't know anything," and they won't be rich at all. The fall guys are the ones who make the millions of dollars, and so that they're willing to take that chance, and there'll be movies and books and you know what, and neither of them have been fired from what they're doing. They've got jobs that continue at the same level. So Don Reagan said when he was going to announce the NSC did it, there was confusion because the president was praising them. And on November the 25th, when the diversion memo appeared, the president and the vice president called Oliver North at the hotel and told him he was a hero. So he was a hero for burning all the material, destroying the documents, as was Poindexter. And so they were doing what they were supposed to do. He was congratulating them. And Don Reagan said, "Well, the president is praising them. It's hard to make him the fall guy." But they did both, because there's a lot of contradictions. And it didn't bother the administration to let them be the fall guy and then praise them for what they did. The Wall Street Journal had an article today. Iran hearings show conflict on policies that Reagan inspired the top advisors to follow. And it goes on to say that Ronald Reagan isn't just a script reader. They're just catching on. He's a script writer. And when the Iran-Contra affair unraveled last fall, he was victimized by misinformation. He appeared to have demonstrated very little anger or sense of betrayal for those who plunges the administration to chaos by diverting the Iran arms sales profits to the Nicaraguan insurgents. Well, why should he be concerned? He didn't show anger. He doesn't show any hostility towards North and Poindexter. That's because he knew what they knew and probably wrote the script for what they were doing and the suggestions for what they were doing. So he smiles and gives accolades to them while Senator Inouye and the others act so serious as if this country was literally stolen or given away to those guys, when those guys feel comfortable with their boss and the contradictions will be just put out like Alice in Wonderland's story, you know, and history can read both sides from the same people. Ms. Casper Weinberger testified this morning, and of course he said he was very upset because he and George Shultz were given disinformation by the CIA, and that disinformation or information was selectively used to advance the position of the policy issues with the President of the United States, that William Casey told the President of the United States that Iran was falling apart, Iraq was winning the war, Iran needed weapons, and Weinberger thought that was terrible to give disinformation to the President of the United States. But you remember March 1983 when he stood up in the Defense Department and had a press conference with a pointer showing a map with an airstrip to Grenada. This is where the great Russian airplanes were going to land. They were going to invade the north part of America and the west part of America, the east and west sides, and use those air bases in Grenada, the large base, for a landing strip to take over our country in Central America. And after they invaded Grenada, it turned out that a British company was building the airstrip. It's not big for Russian weapons. It was to hope to get a resort going there or vacation land in Grenada. And he was giving disinformation to us the entire length of the Reagan administration so far, filled with lies and statistics. And then he gets up on television under oath and says, can you imagine giving William Casey the wrong information? The San Francisco Chronicle had a large article this week, and you'll see many of them, with the following line, the big cover story, the Colonel's Coup. The Iran-Contra affair was run from the start to finish by career military personnel. The colonels did it. And then they have pictures along with this big headline. And there's General Richard Secord, a general. There's Admiral John Poindexter. There's General Robert Dutton. There's General John Singlaub. The colonels were Robert McFarlane and Oliver North, but there were three generals and one admiral, and they were very high up. And this story that the colonel down below did it all simply isn't true. Now, to conclude their hearings, they quickly said there were 250,000 documents, 30 witnesses, 41 days of testimony. The investigations of this kind of behavior, this malfeasance in the White House or in Washington, is always covered up with statistics. And then Daniel Inouye reminded us the Watergate had 53 days of public testimony, 134 days of hearings, and 81 witnesses. And it reminds me of the Warren Commission, where the J. Edgar Hoover and the FBI had 25,000 interviews, 2,300 reports, 25,400 pages. The Secret Service had 5,550 interviews, et cetera, et cetera. Each one of these groupings makes the decision before the commission or the inquiry begins what the conclusion is. Then they take the evidence to and the questions and the witnesses to fit the agreed-upon conclusion before they ever get started. With the Warren Commission, it was Oswald, Lee Harvey Oswald did it alone, and Jack Ruby had one-minute epilepsy. With Watergate, it was Richard Nixon was, according to those tapes, and there was so much else about him, he was making payoffs or planning to pay off witnesses, and his anxious, eager beavers from the White House basement, again, were tampering with Democratic headquarters, but the real crime was the payoff of witnesses. And in the case of the Iran-Contra affair, they narrowed the entire affair down to how did the decision come to make sell weapons to Iran when this is a terrorist country, and why was the decision made to divert profits down to Central America, and none of their answers or the responses or questions even fit came near the truth. There were three factors that caused these hearings. They didn't want to have them. I've had among my articles and collections material on all of these issues, not the diversion of the profit of the arms sales, but arming Iran, this administration, since late 1980, and even prior to that. But the Boland Amendment, the military and CIA assisting in Central America, this was all common knowledge. And there were only three factors, again, that caused the hearings in the first place, or all these sanctimonious members of the House and Senate wouldn't even be opening their mouths. One was the newspaper in Lebanon that broke the story of arms to Iran. One was the blackmail threat of Roy Furmark and Adnan Khashoggi, who said that they loaned $10 million to the White House team to get the arms going for Iran. And instead of getting their money, it was the money went down and was diverted to arming the Contras. And then Mr. Hasenfuss landed in the grass, and his Southern Air plane was linked to the same company, the same plane that was shipping arms to Iran. Other than that, they could have sailed through the entire Reagan administration and kept doing more, including their 50 current covert operations that are still going on. Senator Cohen of Maine was interviewed after the hearings today. Some of you might have seen him on television. And they said to him, how are you ever going to dissolve the discrepancies? Well, they could do that in 10 minutes if they got the right people under oath. But he settled for what they settled for, and these commissions settled for. He said, we will never be able to dissolve the discrepancies. He said, this Senate House report will be a preliminary report. History will produce more. And that is true, and Senator Cohen is right. When the report comes out, it will be a preliminary, like the Senate Watergate hearings or the Warren report. And this report, they're all of the same fabric and same people behind these machinations. But there are processes that can bring out the truth if you have the patience and live long enough. There is an orderly process to bring these things about. First are the public hearings, which we have seen. I watched them from gavel to gavel and even got up at 6 every morning, which almost killed me. I'm so glad it's over. The public hearings, and then they publish their book, and they give you little tidbits like the Tower Report, which is filled with information. Then there's a prosecution of a few, and they begin giving immunity to the lesser ones like they did at Watergate. And if they prosecuted the lesser ones, they'd be less likely to destroy and shred papers and lie. But they let all of them off trying to get what they call the top dogs, and then the top dogs are forgiven, just like Richard Nixon wasn't impeached. He goes home and comes back as the elder statesman, and they're giving immunity right now to just about everybody except Oliver North and John Poindexter and Richard Secord and Albert Hakim, and then they'll get the other two. Poindexter and North will get a pardon from the president. The third process is congressional committees. At the time of Watergate, there was Senator Frank Church and Representative Pike. With the Kennedy assassination, the House Select Committee on Assassination started going into the murder of Martin Luther King and John Kennedy again in 1976. Came to a conclusion there was a conspiracy in both cases. And in this case, the judiciary and various members of Congress are delving into some hard questions, and they pertain to all of the subjects that should have been heard publicly, but they go into small committees, and you don't get word-to-word, day-to-day vision of what's asked or not asked, and then you can buy the hearings if you know where to order them from the government printing office. Then the fourth stage is individual researchers or muckrakers, such as myself or others who expose publicly the real or apparent misconduct and the books that will come out, articles that have come out, more articles, newsletters. And these individuals are the ones that fill the libraries, the bookstores, and make the extensive connections and details that have to be made. The congressional committees are just a group of idiots that sit there, but they do open a door, and as John Ehrlichman said at the time of Watergate, you can't put the toothpaste back in the tube. Then the fifth recourse is if there are private lawsuits. In this case, there's the Christic Institute that has named 28 defendants that are very much a part of the Iran-Contra affair. It was a shame that people in Washington didn't even acknowledge their existence and made slurring remarks about them and hope that they never have to see or hear from the likes of Danny Sheehan, who's probably 2 miles away from where the Watergate hearings were taking place, but they ignore him as if he's just a non-person. But there is a progress that will be going on for years, probably for all of our lifetimes, because this isn't going to stop for a long, long time. So while those pasty-faced men up there, all men, there wasn't a woman among them, give their little excuses and cover-ups, there will be more that will come out in spite of the dumb faces they had, the dumb questions they had, the evasions they took, the speeches they allowed, and so forth. But the system always stays the same. It's made to stay the same. It will stay intact. There will be no congressional approval of the National Security Director. The military admirals and generals will fill the NSC staff and take control of the president's ears. It's the year of the 200th anniversary of the Constitution. You'll have hear quotes, how great the system works, its strength, the necessity for the president and Congress to work together on foreign policy, domestic policy. But they don't tell you, and this is essential, and we've shared this many times, when the Constitution was written, there was no National Security Council. There was no CIA. And once that was put together with William Stevenson of British intelligence, who moved to Rockefeller Center in 1943 and combined the know-how of the great British Empire with Reinhard Gehlen, Hitler's chief of intelligence of the Eastern Division. Once the war was over in 1945 and Stevenson and Gehlen and Alan Dulles and John Foster Dulles and William Sullivan, William Donovan and William Casey all got together, then the National Security Council toppled the decision-making of foreign policy. And the Constitution goes to hell, and if you don't get rid of the NSC, there's no balance with the Constitution. They keep saying in the hearings, if you watch them day after day, how can the president, the executive, get away with the legislative? We have to find peace. Well, the legislative are 500-something elected boobs who don't have the nerve and guts to say to the president, the people feeding your ears are lying to you like Casey lied to you. They want a war. They're trained for war. They went to the war college. They live and die for this great big bang. So the Congress are pushed aside. And what they call coexistence is that the Congress gives the NSC advisors, such as Henry Kissinger, Zbigniew Brzezinski, and Frank Carlucci, the likes of them, everything they want. A listener called last week on the talk show part of the program and reminded me of the colonel or the description of the colonel in the White House in the book by Peter Drucker called Adventure of a Bystander. And I got it out, and what I read in there this week, I've read it before, is pertinent to these hearings and to the conflict, the constitutional conflict that's taking place. Peter Drucker brought Fritz Kramer to this country. They both grew up in Frankfurt, Germany. Kramer, the mentor of Henry Kissinger, Kramer, the plans officer of the Pentagon, Kramer, who sits in the National Security Council, the mentor to Alexander Haig, who would like to be president of the United States. Fritz Kramer, according to Peter Drucker, who brought him here, had three goals, and they lived and worked through the person named Henry Kissinger. The first thing he said about government is the primacy of foreign policy over domestic policies. Foreign policy deals with survival in this very dangerous world. Only, he says, after you survive can a country concern itself with the Constitution, with the laws, with social justice, and with economics. Now, Fritz Kramer, sitting in the National Security Council, can certainly tell Oliver North that the Constitution and laws have to wait. That's why Secretary Fawn Hall says she's a team worker. You have to be above the law because you have to survive the menace of the Soviet beast. And the Constitution, laws, and social justice, or economics, such as going to debt or spending $1 trillion a year or $10 trillion or how many is it for Star Wars and the crazy figures that came out. So this is primary. This is what Kramer believes and what he told Kissinger. The second point about Fritz Kramer, he said, is the primacy of power in foreign affairs. Power, he meant, is military strength and military might. Now, the proteges of Fritz Kramer and Henry Kissinger in the NSC, such as John Lehman, our Secretary of Navy, who wanted these 600 huge ships while the country goes bankrupt, Robert McFarland, Fawn Hall's mother worked for her, McFarland, setting up a lot of the duplicity right under and with the cooperation of the President of the United States and with North, and later he was under McFarland, he took his job, and Caspar Weinberger and Admiral Poindexter, have power and military might. And the third requirement was a great man as a foreign minister. And he set up Henry Kissinger, who went from, they put him into Harvard, and then the Council of Foreign Relations, and the Bilderberger, and the Trilateral Commission. And after Kissinger was Secretary of State and National Security Advisor, he's the roving ambassador for a fee of $10,000 or $20,000 a day of Kissinger Associates, and he conducts foreign policy, as which is, as Fritz Kramer said, the conduct of foreign policy affairs was the ultimate challenge to statesmanship. It required a genius. And all of these people that got up to speak, George Shultz and Weinberger and many others, referred to the genius of Henry Kissinger. And he controls the news media. Every one of the four major stations has access. And, of course, when this Iran-Contra affair began and ended, you saw Brent Scowcroft on the TV. He's chairman of Kissinger Associates. You see Alexander Haig. You see Henry Kissinger, the elder statesmen that sit back. And if these guys got caught with from the newspaper in Lebanon and so forth, then they have Kissinger and Haig and Kramer sitting back there. They have their own safety net. Now, we heard a lot about the rule of law. George Shultz told it's the coin, you know, the crown and or whatever his... It was so sickening to hear his quotation. The rule of law, this was so important. Congress has to be informed. But what were these people mad about? What was their nose out of joint for? It was out of joint because they had to have a committee in spite of all the evidence that came down, in spite of Reagan's incompetence. They know his duplicity, and they covered this up very well. They had to have hearings. They were complaining, what? Because Congress wasn't consulted, because they bypassed the State Department, the Joint Chief of Staff. I don't believe they did all that, but that's what they want to think happened. The Secretary of Defense, the CIA, and National Security Agency, they were out on their own, and Congress wasn't consulted. Congress was lied to. There are eight members of Congress from the House, the Senate, Intelligence, the House Intelligence, are always told about covert actions. And if this is true, they've been informed and already had written findings on 50 covert actions that Reagan has been manipulating just at the time the Iran-Contra affair came down. They said there were 50 that he was in operation doing now. But they wanted to be included. And they gave an example that it's exceptional that they weren't included in the arms sales to Iran. But they're reminded by Caspar Weinberger, we got along very well with the Grenada invasion, because we told Congress about it, and the House Intelligence, Senate Intelligence knew on Friday and the invasion was Sunday, and you didn't say a word, and you didn't leak, and we could be great friends. Well, what was so great about the Grenada invasion? What if the eight members or six members had said, wait, why are you going in there? Why do you have to kill Maurice Bishop? Is there any alternative to what you've cooked up? This was Admiral Poindexter and Robert Brown of Soldier of Fortune and Ollie North and Robert McFarlane. They cooked up and they cooked up this Grenada invasion. Would the members of Congress, the group that's informed, have input about objecting? Did they say prove that the airport airstrip was built by the Soviet Union? What makes Maurice Bishop seek Soviet assistance? In March of 1983, he was in the White House trying to see and spoke with William Clark for a few moments, and he left so dejected he had to depend on the Soviet Union for keeping their small island going. And what did we gain? And the various persons that got up, two or three witnesses mentioned the great successes like Grenada. And they're proud of Grenada. The people that want to be notified, that want the rule of law, that want to be consulted, want to be kept informed on who they're going to kill, who they're going to overthrow, whether it's Mozambique or Laos or Angola. They want to participate. They don't want to be outsiders. And they feel this makes them strong. And the invasion of Grenada made America strong. Reagan never stood so tall, they said. And why did he stand tall? Because he could prove to Ollie North and his Vietnam survivors, we will win the next one. And they go in on this little island and take it. So the Senate and House Intelligence want findings. That's what we heard over and over again. They want to be in. They want to make it legal. You put it down like the Ron, use Ryan bill that said, put it in writing where you're going to go so we know where you're going to go. And we haven't heard one episode that they stopped. They liked the adventures in Iran when Mossadegh was killed, in Guatemala with Arbenz, in Nicaragua, in Taiwan with a dictatorship of 40 years. It just said this past week they're going to give up their 40-year dictatorship, with the coup in South Korea, with the murder of Allende in Chile, with Bhutto in Pakistan, with the shooting of Mrs. Indira Gandhi in India, with the Dallas episode, November 22nd, 1963, none of them challenged the horrible lies or questioned the 250 books since the assassination that disproved the entire Warren Report. These people want to know when we overthrow Laos. John Singh Lab's over there now. When we overthrow Bolivia again and put in the cocaine barons. Frank Carlucci helped overthrow Brazil for a 24-year dictatorship. We killed Mr. Trujillo, Dominican Republic. We want to get rid of Noriega in Panama, overthrow Angola, Afghanistan, keep trying to kill Castro in Cuba. We helped kill in Philippines, put the coup in there, and Mr. Aquino was shot down with the assistance of persons close to our intelligence community. And I'll continue in 1 minute. We'll take a one-minute break here and just finish off what these people want to be included in. They feel that they were bypassed because the National Security Council didn't call and tell them about these wonderful things. I'll take a one-minute break right now and tell you that when this next half hour is over, World Watchers, in case you're new listeners and don't know about the format here, or for those who do know, we switch to one-hour talk show, and you call and contribute your feelings. I'd like to know what you feel about the Iran-Contra affair and what you've heard with this parade of 30 witnesses and all these days that they've been in front of us. Who were your favorites? Who were the worst? How do you feel about it? And we'll do that in about 30 minutes.